is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host.
What is this, the Willinchek boys?
This is one of the Willinchek boys, Jack Willinchek. I like that. If you didn't recognize that voice, it was Dennis Miller in his wonderful interview here on this very show a few weeks back. You know, in our first segment of the show here, we're going to be talking about a brand-new bill, HB 2327, which is the ban ingredients used to make designer drugs, such as spice. So, you know, we'll be explaining, number one, what things like spice are, what designer drugs are. I think we're joined here on the line by Representative Eddie Farnsworth from District 12. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate having me on.
Absolutely. All right, so why don't we start with that? What are designer drugs?
Well, really what this does is this expands the definition of dangerous drugs. And so even though the street term is designer drugs, this is a broader kind of definition. But usually what we're talking about here are bath salts and spice. They have names that are kind of confusing and actually misleading because these really have nothing to do with bath salts. These are essentially synthetic bath salts and cannabinoids that are mind-altering. And these were developed essentially for that specific purpose, is to have a mind-altering effect. So they're not used for anything else except for that mind-altering effect.
Right, they're essentially synthetic drugs. And I know there's a very long history to this, and the problem with synthetic drugs has always been that, you know, technically they're not the regular drug. I mean, technically, you know, if cannabis is or THC, if those are named as dangerous drugs, you could come up with a whole other chemical which does exactly the same thing that THC does, but technically is completely different chemically from THC. It's kind of like, you know, the difference between real sugar and aspartame. They both taste sweet. They both do the same thing, but chemically they are completely different. So legally that presents a problem, and I take it that that's what this bill is designed to fix.
Correct. What we saw is that these particular mixtures, they're known as K2, spice, all kinds of different names, and they're very misleading. These mixtures are currently sold in head shops, tobacco shops, various retail outlets, and over the internet. Now, they are supposed to be for non-consumption. And most of the packages, the way they got around the law was that they would put on there that these are not for consumption, and yet they were sold for consumption. And the other problem is, just like you said, these are a little bit different than the regular drugs. And what would happen if you think about it like a Christmas tree? You have this Christmas tree that they would decorate with bulbs and lights and whatever, and we would make that particular Christmas tree illegal. And all they would have to do is change one of the bulbs or one of the lights or put a little tinsel on it, and now it's completely different than what we made illegal, and that's how they were getting around it. So what we did in this bill is we're saying, okay, instead of trying to outlaw that particular Christmas tree with all the decorations, we're actually going to make it illegal to sell the Christmas tree. So it doesn't matter how many decorations you put on it, the Christmas tree. So we took that base compound that it, and several of those that are very commonly used in these types of synthetic drugs, and we made that base compound illegal. So it doesn't matter what they're doing other than that. And we hope that this is going to have an impact on this, the availability of this kind of a drug.
You know, one of the rumors I've heard is that this bill would somehow affect the legality of THC for medical marijuana use. Is there any truth to that?
I don't believe so. There were two things that we looked at very closely. One is, was this going to make any kind of a legal drug illegal, like the regular cannabis for America or for medical marijuana? The answer is that we've had all through the process has been no, and we've had DPS chemists that have looked at this and others that have looked at it, and we're assured that it's not going to do that. The second thing that I wanted to be very clear on is that we weren't going to accidentally make some kind of commercially available product like Comet or any others, Windex.
Right.
We weren't going to make those illegal. And again, we were assured emphatically that no, these formulas that we're addressing here are limited specifically to be mind-altering drugs, and they have no commercial viability.
I guess, you know, the other issue here, and I think you touched on it earlier, is that a lot of these drugs are sold online. So this would be, of course, a state law, and, you know, the people who sell these drugs online wouldn't necessarily be able to be prosecuted under it, right? Is that correct?
Well, it depends. It certainly makes prosecution more difficult because you're going to have to find somebody, number one, who's selling this over the Internet. Number two, they're in a different jurisdiction. However, if they are selling to people who are in Arizona, then the assumption is that they have availed themselves of Arizona law as if they had a presence here. So we could go after them if we knew who they were and if we could actually go after them physically by identifying them. I think that that's something that's possible, but certainly it's more difficult than prosecuting somebody who's selling it in a neighborhood head shop.
Right, and it's definitely improvement over the situation now, which is that I saw that up in Yavapai County they were trying to prosecute these kinds of drugs, these kinds of synthetic drugs like bath salts, by just basically getting injunctions against the shops that were doing it, which is very difficult legally because they have to go one by one getting injunctions against, every time a new company or new store pops up that sells these, they have to get another injunction. Obviously, a law like this would take care of that problem, wouldn't it?
Correct. In fact, the county attorney in Yavapai, Sheila Polk, was very instrumental in leading this type of legislation. And she's the one that was going after that particular drugs by going shop by shop. The problem was, and it works in the small counties, it doesn't work in the big counties. There are just too many shops. There's no way to get an injunction on every shop, as you mentioned, by going shop by shop. So that monumental task would not translate into Maricopa County, Pima County, even probably Pinal County. So she led the charge, and I give her great kudos for this solution. Understand, this isn't going to be a fix-all. We have people that continue to, I have no idea why they put this stuff in their body, but I've heard recently of a new drug that the base component is battery acid. That seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
So we're never going to stop crazy people from putting stuff in their bodies, but what we're trying to do is stop this misbranding, these synthetic drugs now being taken by children. In fact, I've already had emails that have come to me that have thanked me because they believe it's going to help their family members who are currently using this otherwise legal drug, even though they're not supposed to use it internally. So this, we think that this is going to cut a large swath through these particular drugs that are mentioned in this expansion. But it's not going to solve everything, but I do think this is a great step in the right direction.
My producer wrote down here that there's a federal law that bans synthetic drugs. Does it ban the same kinds of synthetic drugs?
Well, they have the analogous statute. We looked at that, and I think California did that. The feds have done that. There have been some challenges based on the idea that's too vague. I believe you're an attorney. I think I think that's the problem is vagueness.
Okay. Right.
And so we looked at that, and we decided not to go in that direction until a couple of these other laws play out in the courts and then see what the ultimate resolution is. So we decided to go with this in the interim.
Right, that makes sense. I know that's always been the problem with, as I said before, laws against synthetic drugs is vagueness because, and you mentioned it too at the top of the hour here, was that it's like you gave the perfect analogy. You change one little light bulb, you change one little, chemical, and the whole compound technically is different and technically is not subject to the previous law. Or you can even just come up with whole new compounds that do exactly the same thing but are technically different. So again, they're technically not subject to the law. And I guess really you're just playing this kind of constant game of catch up, which as you pointed out, we'll never be able to predict every single chemical there is in the universe that could be used, in a narcotic fashion to harm somebody like a drug. But we're just doing the best we can with these kind of bills, right?
Absolutely. When you have somebody who's willing to inject battery acid into their body, there is no way to predict what else they're going to put into their body. So the only thing we can do is our very best to try to keep up with these things and try to stop the availability, because we're really concerned, at least my concern, are the kids that are going into these places. Probably shouldn't be in there, but they can go into drugstores and other things, and they're getting these because spice. I mean, that is an innocuous name.
Yeah.
That people think, well, what's wrong with spice? Well, it's not what they think it is. Or bath salts. Until you educate someone, they think bath salts. Well, what's wrong with bath salts? You can soak in those. It has nothing to do with those, and these are exclusively for the purposes of mind-altering. So yes, this is going to be an ongoing battle. We will continue to fight the fight, but the nice thing about this piece of legislation is that we are taking a large swath by literally making thousands and thousands of modifications and formulations illegal all at one swoop.
Good, okay. We've got just a little bit of time here before we go to our break, but I'm talking to Representative Eddie Farnsworth about his new bill to ban certain synthetic drugs like bath salts, spice. You know, the first time I heard about these was through the news. I don't think I've ever actually seen these being sold. But the whole point is it's very hard to tell what they are. So I want to thank you for coming on the show, Eddie, and thank you for your good work over there at the legislature.
You bet. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is Jack Wilinchek on Legalese Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. Welcome back to Legalese. Your host, Jack Wilinchek on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. You know, I just spoke to Representative Eddie Farnsworth about his bill to ban certain synthetic drugs such as spice, bath salts from the state. And later in the show, I'll be talking to Senator Chester Cranwell about SB 1439, which makes silver and gold legal tender in Arizona. We'll see what he has to say about that. And in the last segment of the show, I'll be talking to Tempe Councilman Colby Granville, who's, I believe, supporting same-sex unions, civil unions in Tempe. But for, you know, our segment right now, I have the rare pleasure of talking to my producer, Robert, about the fact that we tried to find somebody to talk about gun control legislation here in Arizona, and nobody would come on.
Yeah, I think what it is, I think that maybe the state-level folks are waiting to take the lead from the federal legislation that will be, you know, being talked about tomorrow. So trying to get people to come forward and speak their opinion on this very, very sensitive topic has been difficult. And I think that that's, you know, become more common in this radio business and in the media in general in the recent years with social media and that sort of thing, where there's that instant sense of what the public is thinking. And people in political circles and in other areas of prominence, they would rather wait and see, you know, what the feelings are of people before they put their thoughts or ideas on the line. They want to get consensus first.
Sure. And then with this particular subject too, with gun control, it's one of the most sensitive subjects out there for a politician, especially in a conservative state like ours. You know, one thing I would point out, and I think I read a good editorial by, you know, one of my favorite people over at the Arizona Republic there, Lori Roberts, just saying that it seems like there's a lot of bills, a lot of things that the legislature is working on. And you know, before I say this, I'll preface this by saying that I'm a conservative, I am Republican, but I will still say that there's a lot of bills the legislature is working on that are basically like, you know, solutions in search for a problem. You know, there's stuff that nobody really cares about. You know, it's like doing, I think the title of our article was doing something about nothing. You know, well, I don't want to put down, you know, those kind of bills too hard. But, you know, it seems to me, that's my impression at least, is that the legislature is working on a lot of things. The one that comes to my mind, I know there's a bill out there in the legislature, it has something to do with, you know, UN control. You know, the country is, I mean, there's a lot of little bills like that that, you know, it's, why are they working hard on that and they're not working hard on gun control?
Yeah, well, Jack, you know, sometimes I think what you're searching for here is that they'll grasp those feel-good type legislation pieces, the good public relations type stuff where they know they can get some good mileage out of it, you know, for their reputation. And, you know, the sticky stuff, you know, it's the hot potato stuff. You know, who wants to talk about, you know, a story like Christy Stadler, who committed suicide a couple years ago. And, you know, this is a gun control issue to do with mentally ill folks, where this is a young woman who struggled with mental illness for a dozen years, basically half of her life. She killed herself when she was 24 years old, resident of Ahwatukee. And, you know, she had all types of, you know, history. Hospitalizations, using medication, as far as going and putting an electrical implant in her brain, I believe it is, to help with depression, constant counseling with psychiatrists and so forth. Long, long history, no question that she had these issues. Yet, she was a gun owner. And as I research the story, I find out that the reason she can be a gun owner is because she's never been involuntarily committed to any type of an institution. She had been hospitalized for her mental illness and depression, but voluntarily committing herself, you know, at these times. And that's, I guess, something to do with the Brady Law, where you if you voluntarily commit yourself, then you don't have to end up on any type of a registry that says you're dangerous, like you'd be a criminal, or a criminal, you know, would be to themselves, or, you know, with depression and mental illness, be it themselves or the population. But that seems to be the sticking point with why legislation at this point is having a difficult time even on that. And Mr. Stadler, Christie's father, he attempted to sue the police department and the city of Phoenix, you know, back a year or so ago, whatever.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, this was saying that, you know, they felt that what they did by – they returned his daughter's gun to her after she was released from, like, a halfway house. So,
right.
Again, you know, massive history of mental illness. She had just tried to kill herself only, like, a month before this, and the police returned her gun to her. And, you know, the statement from the city – was that, you know, based on, from the state, I guess from the state attorney, was that if we had kept her gun the way the statutes are written now, she would have had a Second Amendment case against us to say that, you know, we're holding her gun and that's the way the laws are written. And yet, like I said, this is not, you know, the type of issue that too many politicians want to get too close to without a lot of, you know, convening with each other, thinking about this, trying to look at every angle of how this will impact, you know, the state, the reputation of them individually, the reputation of their party, whichever side is working on this bill. So these are challenging things. And, you know, returning to your reference about Lori Roberts' article there, that it's easier to go the path of less resistance with bills that you make if they're on simple things like, let's vote on what the state
that's exactly
gun should
it.
Be.
Yeah, that's exactly. You know? Yeah, that's a perfect example. Those kind of bills, like, you know, what's the new you know, we've got a state bird, state song, got a state everything, right? Yeah, it's just little simple bills, or, you know, really just playing to the choir kind of stuff. But real hard hitting legislation, important things like this, you know, just doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, there is actually in just the news in the past 48 hours or so. Senator Mark Pryor, who is from Arkansas, he is trying to introduce what is going to be called the National Instant Criminal Background Check System Improvement Act of 2013. Say that three times fast. Anyway, this would be, you know, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, you know, obviously has...
That was people, today's news you're talking about with the...
Yeah, this is... the Christie Stadler, you know, situation was... committed suicide a couple of years ago. The father filed the lawsuit a year ago. But right now, we've finally gotten around at, you know, a level where they're thinking about that mentally ill people could be added to that database so that an instant background check happens. Somebody can't walk into a store to buy a gun and then go out and blow their head off an hour later. And I don't know, you know, the status of whether that's going to happen or not, but at least there's some movement in that. But most people... Like I said, you know, I couldn't get local politicians to...
Yeah, you're talking about something at the federal level there.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's exactly my point.
Again, like I said, you know, I think just like what's happening with the gun control stuff, that'll be happening at the federal level with being announced tomorrow. I believe that the state folks will wait to take the lead on what's happening at that level.
Yeah, that's fair enough. If that's what they're doing, that's fine. But... you know, I'm probably getting off into a whole nother tangent here in that, you know, I do think that the legislature tends to focus on just a lot of things that are not real issues. There are real issues out there, whether it's this, whether it's gun control. You know, there's the budget, you know, the problem with child protective services. There's another one.
Yeah.
You know, we got to take care of our kids, for crying out loud. Instead you hear about just these bills. And, you know, I don't want to put down our next guest. I know his bill has to do with you know, making legal tender in Arizona, you know, gold and silver legal tender in Arizona. I'm going to put him to the challenge here and ask him, you know, is this really what we need to be focusing on? Is this the most important thing to our state right now?
Well, you know, there is a big concern about finances and money and so forth. And basically, I read a story in researching for this that the state of Texas – is taking some of their excess budget surplus, and they're buying gold and holding it for the state to have as like an investment. So there's fears, I guess, of, you know, inflating the dollar and what Bernanke's doing and all that. So I guess Mr. Chester Crandall, who will be joining us after the break, is going to tell us why we should have silver and gold as tender in Arizona.
Well, we'll put him to the challenge. All right, this is Jack Wilenchek, and thanks for coming out for the segment, Robert. That was Robert Bomback, our producer, on Legalese Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
You have the right to remain silent. That's what I'm... If you give up the right to remain silent,
freedom.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Freedom.
You have the right to speak with an attorney.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is your host, Jack Wilenchek, on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. And thank you there, Mr. Dragnet. What was that guy's name? What was it? Jack Webb. No, but what was his character's name? It was Joe Friday. Thank you. All right. thank you, Mike over there in the control room. All right. I want to welcome onto our show Senator Chester Crandall, who's here to discuss SB 1439, which makes silver and gold legal tender in Arizona. Senator Crandall, thanks for coming on.
Hey, you bet. Thanks, Jack, for the invitation.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, and I want to just tell you, you know, in the last segment we were talking about why we couldn't get somebody to come on the show and talk about, you know, gun control legislation here in the state. And I did make the comment that I do think there's a lot of bills, a lot of things that the legislature is doing, you know, that aren't necessarily focusing on our top priorities. So what I want to do here is, you know, first thing, I'm going to put you on the defensive. I'm going to ask you, explain how this bill, which according to my notes here, would make silver and gold legal tender in Arizona. Explain how that's a priority.
Well, I think it's a priority to those who actually brought it to me and said, will you please run the legislation? You know, this wasn't driven by me. This was driven by some constituents that feel like that they would have the opportunity to use gold and silver as legal tender. And so, you know, being elected by constituents, I said, I'll be glad to run it and see where it goes.
All right, well, why don't you explain exactly what the bill does?
Well, basically what it does, this first go-around, building on what Utah did last year, is it simply puts it in a statute that says Arizona will recognize gold and silver coin as legal tender in the state of Arizona. And that's basically all this does. Next year, because there's a delayed date on the bill that's going through till 2014, next year would be follow-up legislation to actually put in the implementation process of how that would take place.
What does that actually mean to people? Are they going to be able to pay their taxes using gold and silver?
Well, that was in the original bill. That was amended out because some of the agencies, not knowing exactly what it's going to look like down the future, that part was amended out. But certainly will be looked at as we get the implementation and all the agencies down here really understand how it will work and which direction we'll go. So more of anything, the implementation part of this will actually be follow-up legislation next year as we move through the process and follow the example of some of the other states that are running this and particularly Utah that, you know, is a couple of years ahead of us and use some of their language in that so we don't fall in the same pitfalls, some of the same pitfalls that they had as they implemented in Utah.
All right, can you give me a specific example of something that, you know, how would this make my life any easier, being able to pay, making silver and gold legal tender? What's something that I'd be able to do that I wasn't able to do previously?
Well, I don't know that it would make anything easier than what you're doing right now. I mean, you use the dollar, you use credit cards, you use all the things that are doing there. I think what it does is give people an opportunity to use some of the gold that they've been buying up, some of the gold and silver and those kind of things they've been buying up, and using it as a legal tender rather than having to change it back with using the Federal Reserve currency that is being printed.
All right. I mean, I guess I'm really just searching for an even more, you know, kind of specific and kind of direct example. I mean, you can't pay your taxes, I guess, using gold and silver into this bill. So,
I think one of the things that you can speculate, and here again, this is down the road, but I think some of the things that Utah are looking to do is to actually have repositories that you would deposit your gold and your silver in, and then be able to use a credit card, a debit card, just like you do right now, and they would pay the bills. That's just one example of possibility. I'm not saying that that's the way it will go, but that's certainly one possibility to look at.
We mentioned earlier that some of your constituents were asking for this kind of bill. Why were they asking for it?
Well, the issue is it's outlined in the Constitution, and they would like to be able to get back to using gold and silver as original in the original Constitution. The state has the authority to do that, and I think that's why they've actually brought it to me in that end.
Where is the bill at now? Has it already passed through the House and Senate?
It's passed through both the House and the Senate. It will go go back to final read because the amendment that was put on there, and so it'll go back to final read and then be ready to go to the governor.
Was it tough to get this bill passed?
It did have a few hurdles, but here again, it went along party lines, and so I guess if you consider being tough on party lines, yeah, it had its ups and downs, but for the most part, I thought it went rather smoothly.
I think I read somewhere that the bill doesn't just make all kinds of gold and silver legal tender. It makes minted coins, minted gold and silver coins legal tenders.
That is correct. That is correct.
So only federally minted gold and silver coins?
Correct.
Okay. I know the reason for that is constitutional. If you want to go ahead and explain that.
Well, that is in the Constitution that the federal government is the only one that has a right to mint coinage, gold and silver, and the states can determine whether it's legal tender or not, and so they have the right to mint that, and so that's why it's in there to follow the Constitution.
Under this law, would it be possible for somebody to just use like a private piece, their own little piece of gold and silver as tender?
Well, here again, it depends on how we set up the thing. It would have to meet all the specifications set up by the federal government on using the gold standard and what those are. And so as we go down the road, those things will have to be addressed.
You mentioned the bill's already been through the House and Senate. I guess it's going back, but you think the governor will sign it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends a lot on where we get with the budget and some of the other things that are happening down here. How it plays out when it gets there, and when the budget talks get real serious and the other things that we're dealing with, Medicaid expansion and so kind of like that. Hopefully it doesn't get caught in the shuffle, but there's always a possibility.
You mentioned earlier that this bill is a similar bill, I guess, in Utah. Is it the same bill that passed in Utah already?
Basically the same language. There's a couple of things that we tweaked a little bit, but basically the same language they used to get it in last year to recognize Utah to recognize gold and silver coin as legal tender. Basically the same legislation.
Have there been any notable consequences to the law up there?
Not really. I mean, they're moving ahead. They passed some more legislation this year, like I say, to be able to implement it and so people can start utilizing it. And the thing to remember, this is all voluntary. There's nothing mandatory. It is all voluntary for those who would like to get this set up and use it. There's nothing mandatory in that. But we as a state need to be prepared to handle any situation that arises if people volunteer and start to want to use it.
Yeah, I think I did see, and we already, I think, discussed this, that in Utah, people did try to pay their taxes using gold and silver, and that just didn't work.
Well, because I don't think it was implemented and they got everything put together. I don't think that the homework was done, and that's why I'm saying is we're kind of following along with what Utah has done so that we don't fall into some of the same pitfalls that they ran into in being the first to run this kind of legislation. They've kind of looked at some of the things that we need to do and people that we need to bring to the table so that we can get everything worked out before we run the legislation next year.
All right, real quick here, we just have a minute before a break, but are there any other bills or any other big things you're working on?
You know, not really. I don't think anything out of the extraordinary. I did run a piece of legislation to do a study committee of special taxing districts, fire districts. Seems that every year there's things down here about special taxing districts, particularly fire districts, and some of the problems that they're having. So I put together a study committee that just went through the House yesterday, and will be being sent up to the governor to give us an opportunity to study that. You know, that came in when the state was first made a state and has been here, and it's time we take a look at the demographics and how we provide, you know, fire safety in the state of Arizona.
All right, we got to run out to a break, but thanks for coming to the show, Senator Chester Crandall. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, this is Jack Wilinchek on Legalese Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. Welcome back to Legalese, your host Jack Wilinchek, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. You know, for the last segment of the show here, we'll be talking about, we'll be talking to Tempe Councilman Colby Granville about implementing same-sex unions in Tempe. You know, I just want to say about the last segment there, I was talking to Senator Chester Crandall about a bill to make silver and gold legal tender in Arizona. You know, personally, I'm still not convinced that's a high priority for this state. I do think we have higher priorities. And I do think the legislature has a certain problem with focusing on things that are not important to people. But that said, we'll move on to our next subject here. Do we have Councilman Colby Granville on the phone? Colby,
hi,
are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. I'm happy to be on.
All right. So, are you in favor of an ordinance for same-sex civil unions in Tempe?
Conceptually, yes, although I still have questions on the legality of if we can do it.
Right, and that's probably a good place to start our focus here, because we just had on the show last week the Attorney General, Tom Horn, who, you know, he made the point, and I think he was trying to make it as clearly as he could, that, you know, he doesn't think all civil unions he doesn't think that the an ordinance legalizing civil unions is per se illegal. He pointed out that there is a certain ordinance in Phoenix he referred to that essentially legalizes certain aspects of a civil union there. I think it had something to do with a hospital visitation, which he considered to be legal. So his big point was that there is such a thing as a legal civil union ordinance. But his point is that the one that was just passed down in Bisbee very recently is not a legal civil union ordinance. So I guess my question for you, Tempe Councilman Colby Granville, is what kind of ordinance are you envisioning, or what kind of ordinance do you envision the council passing?
That's a great question. Well, first off, what Phoenix did isn't actually a civil union. What they did is a domestic partnership registry.
Mm-hmm.
So you register with the city that you have a domestic partner, and that enables you to have certain rights. And I think everyone agrees that they're allowed to do that. That's been in place for almost a decade now. It has some value, some limited value, certainly in the city of Phoenix. What Bisbee did was went quite a bit beyond that. They looked at a more traditional civil union in the sense that you probably are thinking of the word. Property rights, adoption, a whole series of other things.
Right, and probate, wills, that kind of thing.
Right, probate, wills, a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't covered by the city of Phoenix, who really just did a domestic partnership registry. And the thing that I frankly don't know is can they do it? Because traditionally I would think they couldn't. And the thing that I wanted to know is, you know, I think everyone assumed they couldn't, and then they did it. And so the thing that I wanted to know from our city attorneys, or, you know, whoever else that we choose to work with someday on this, is what Bisbee did, is it legal? What is the effect of it? Did they overstep their bounds or did they not? And it's interesting, you know, and I have a great deal of respect for Tom Horn in a lot of the areas that he does work, but he's not the maker of the laws. He's the enforcer of the laws.
Right.
So, for example, if the Attorney General's office issues a AG's opinion on something and you follow that opinion and someone brings a lawsuit against you, you can't go to court and say, I'm not in violation of the law because I followed the AG's opinion. The court will say, look, we don't actually care what the AG's opinion says.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, it'll say it may say that it's influential, but you're correct. It won't say that it's binding.
Right, exactly. And so the thing that I'm really, I mean, I understand you know, the AG has his opinion. Clearly, Bisbee has their opinion. And I would assume, although I don't know this, that they got some legal opinion from some lawyer who said, what we're doing, we think we can do. And so what you have is a difference of opinions, and the court will sort it out, I would assume. I don't know if Tom Horn's correct. I don't know if Bisbee's correct. But I do know that conceptually, if I can make a colorable argument legally that either something like what Bisbee has done or what Bisbee has done is allowed, I have no idea if it is or isn't, that we should be making that colorable argument to try and extend rights to everyone to the full extent that we can make a good faith argument. Now, if it turns out our attorneys or other attorneys that we work with come back and say, look, in our opinion, what Bisbee did is totally illegal and it's against state law and they're going to get, you know, slapped down eventually, then in my mind, you know, as much as I would like to do something, I'm not ever going to push an ordinance that our attorneys are telling us is clearly against state law.
Right. And I know that Tom Horan, when he was on the show last week, said that he'd be filing a lawsuit, I think, within 10 days. So I think that was 1 week ago. I guess we've got about 3 days here before he initiates a lawsuit. Of course, you know, lawsuits take time. But I guess we'll have an answer to that question eventually.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's interesting the timing of all of this, frankly. I mean, certainly the Supreme Court has had a big discussion about this recently, and each individual state has had its own discussions. I'm frankly not entirely clear what initiated Bisbee to start this process now, given that there are so many other things pending. I'm frankly not entirely sure what causes, you know, Tom Horan to want to bring the case now when there are so many things pending, mm-hmm. given that by the time it works its way through the court system, either for or against, it may be a moot point.
Right.
But I assume Bisbee has been, you know, working or thinking about this for 3 or 4 months. They've gotten some legal opinions. They've carefully crafted what they've done, I would assume. And they just happened to be at the point where they were ready to pull the trigger about the same time the Supreme Court, you know, granted cert. Tempe is not in the situation of Bisbee. I wouldn't simply rubber stamp what Bisbee did in Tempe and try and push it forward unless we had legal people in Tempe who said, you know, we feel comfortable with what Bisbee did as well. And that's not something that you do in a day or even in a week. That requires, you know, a good bit of research and a little bit of time.
So what I'm gathering is that do you think it's best just kind of wait and see before trying to push through, you know, something along the same lines in Tempe?
I don't know if I'm of the wait and see opinion, because I feel like once Bisbee did this, the cat was sort of out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult for me to tell any group, a little bit longer. That's been the war cry for, giving women the right to vote or allowing interracial marriage or, you know, the answer is always it's getting better, just wait. And so that's a hard one for me to take. Because the other thing I don't want to do is I don't want to sit on my hands for, you know, 6 months or a year waiting on the Supreme Court or waiting on a court case with Bisbee to go through, only to find out that Bisbee could do what they could do and that Arizona, the U.S. Supreme Court, isn't going to do anything or certainly not make it applicable to all states. Maybe they only make it applicable to the federal government in California. And so I wouldn't want, you know, another year to go by where we've done nothing, if there was at least some groundwork we could do to be ready in the event we needed to do something.
Mm-hmm. Have a lot of your constituents been requesting this?
To be candid, nobody did. No, this is, and I'm happy to take the argument on this. I view it as a basic equality issue, and so if everyone told me no and nobody asked for it, I would still feel that I have a basic right, just a basic obligation, just as a person, to make sure that all people are treated equally. Now, I can tell you once it made the paper, and I think, frankly, it kind of incorrectly made the paper, because, you know, the thing that was going on was all I did was I asked for us to have a discussion with our lawyers about this and, you know, to have them do some research. And then that became a much bigger thing that got interviews and got all this stuff. Because conceptually, I do agree with civil unions and gay marriage. But the two are not necessarily tied together conversations. I may agree with civil union and gay marriages, and if our legal people say, look, this isn't within the basket of rights the city has,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to respect that, and that'll be the end of the story, frankly. if our city people come back and say, look, this is something you arguably could do, then I would feel an obligation to at least try to move the ball forward in the small, you know, realm of political influence that I have.
Right. So I guess when I said wait and see earlier, I mean, you're saying you want to wait and see what the city attorney says. You want to get his opinion on whether the Bisbee ordinance is constitutional per Arizona law, per the Arizona Constitution, before trying to do the same thing in Tempe.
Right. Absolutely. I would want to hear what our city attorney said, or anyone they would want to work with as a reference or a resource. But I mean, if the question is this going to be on the agenda in a week? No, it's not. It's not going to be on any agenda anywhere in Tempe. At least I'm not going to put it on an agenda. And so I feel really comfortable that all of the legal people here in Tempe think that we can do it. And that's going to take, I would assume, you know, a few weeks, if not a month or more. Because it's a, you know, it's a tricky area of law. It's a law where very few people have a large in-depth area of knowledge, which is why I would assume that, you know, Bisbee and Tom Horn came to an entirely different conclusion.
Right, you know, and of course we're going to have to go to our final break here in a moment, but I would point out that, you know, Tom Horn's probably going to be filing a lawsuit here very shortly. He'll probably be moving for an immediate preliminary injunction, so we may have at least the beginning of an answer when the court rules on that pretty quickly here. But, you know, I want to thank you for coming on the show, talking to Tempe Councilman Colby Granville. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Mr. Granville.
Thank you, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
Absolutely. And this is Jack Wilenchek signing off here on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX, Legalese.